back in Prime Minister that they'd be wearing horns from the sound of the discussion.
He was very nice. He said that the conclusions in the book were even their own conclusions were at the end said that in the end, all this may prove that Marcus Robb could still be proved to be a forger. But they're saying that the things that we're hearing today, they're putting two and two and two together, coming up with eight, and drawing conclusions of resurrections, something happening beyond what would normally happen. And he says they don't think they've done anything wrong. They happen if they were expelled or Stevenson was expelled. They're perfectly willing to settle out of court.
I guess the argument of the book is that the verdict of the trial speaks of
that the formation of the images would never be really identified chemical or physical, and that therefore it lends itself more to the supernatural than it occurred. My answer to that, I thought a lot about that. If it was a highly pronounced image, that being so pronounced, it would have been immediately recognized as a miraculous type of thing. Been destroyed.
I suppose that was the history.
Well, they suspect that it has been
exactly.
Although there's a lot of
the reason they don't.
They also say, stuff that I've read is that they suspect that the image may be fading, but that the image may also be getting stronger. When they wrap it up, they could recognize very little more. That's in Wilson's book. Yeah, he uses the reverse, and that's why the image may actually be getting stronger than life.
So that would be funny.
He would have
eventually turn into a
button. Send me a copy of your article when you're done. Send you a copy of mine. Do you have a card?
I don't have a card.
Well, they print Springfield Union. And I'll be guest speaker on three radio stations.
I'm speaking on the radio myself on Sunday. I'll use this one.
Are you speaking on radio Sunday? Next one. Oh, you're with the, you know, it's funny that I didn't call the Catholic Service. I got to put you on insurance card. No, I don't. What I do for you. At least have it. I'll send it to you.
Okay, fine. Yeah, and also it's going to appear in, I think I'm also doing something for the National Catholic Choir Service.
Mm-hmm.
And the Catholic Organization. Thank you.
Oh, did you? Are you full-time on staff?
An introduction in Italian, and then John Heller will read the paper that Giovanni has prepared, okay? Would you welcome Professor Ricci, please?
Giovanni expressed appreciation for being received here. He said that he had worked on the powder or dust, which he obtained both by vacuuming parts of the shroud, micro vacuum container which he designed, and also from the container in which the shroud rested. So he is one who does the microanalysis by taking a look at very tiny bits and pieces of the thing, the debris, if you will, the powder. He's a meticulous worker, and he's worked long and hard on this problem, and the team is very proud to have him a member. I am going to read his paper. I'm sure he will correct me if I do anything wrong. On October 9, 1978, at night, I drew by hand, by forced suction, that's vacuuming, particles and dust from the front, which he's going to call the recto, and the back, the verso side of the shroud. And all the samples from the back were obtained by suction after separating to some extent the shroud from the supporting cloth by clipping some of the threads which attached the former to the latter and inserting this device which he had designed and built. The he also used fiber optics which he designed in order to take pictures of the backside of the shroud. Such operations were done under sterile conditions for the conservation of the dust obtained. The tested areas were in the first slide. First slide, please.
We have the lights down, please. Don't take them all the way down.
A is the surface of the recto or front. B is the verso area of the hands. C, the verso area of the face. D, verso of the feet. And E, verso area of the buttocks. Okay, lights please. Small pieces of wax were drawn from the recto side and approximately 2 milligrams of dust and particles from each area of the verso side were subjected to suction. About 80 pictures were taken of the four areas of the verso by using fiber optics, and about 1,000 pictures for recording of the operations were taken. Next slide, please. This is the operation in process. The there's another one? Another one, please. Oh, back up? No? That's all right. Leave it there. Okay. The shrine where the shroud had been kept was examined in advance, and dust particles and samples were drawn from its interior, and the items were used, and the items that were used to roll up the shroud and protect it were not exhibited, which refers to the backing cloths and the protecting red silk. The trend of the research. The original research program handed over to the surveillance committee that was established by the Turinese religious authorities, the guideline of the work which is still in progress. The large amount of material obtained from the sampling and the subsequent vast amount of observations made has made a very limited part of what has been done be able to be presented here. Further lines of research of substantial interest are still to be done ahead. The very wide span of the current research and of its newly emerging lines was constrained by the extensive use of time of investigation and by the large expenditures involved. Even today, he cannot state that the analysis of the dust drawn from the shroud may still not be done for a matter of several years, perhaps decades, before obtaining a definitive and complete
research on the subject. In any case, the lines of research that have been pursued to date are one, direct optical examination of the verso, photographic examination of areas on the verso, microbiological research on the dust, scanning electron microscope, microscopy of dust, qualitative and semi-quantitative microanalyses of dust, examination of comparative dust using the same research methods employed on the shroud dusts, examination of the pollutants and foreign matter found during the tests, a study of a proposal for suitable preservation of the shroud in the future. It should be mentioned here that absolutely nothing has been done to conserve or preserve the shroud according to modern museum practices. It's just kept rolled up in a box, in a box, in a box. Now the results and methods. The direct optical examination of the verso. The verso of the shroud shows several stains, but not the image of the recto. You'll recall that the image is on the crowns of the threads of the microfibers in the slides which Sam Pellicori showed. The fiber optics, which was used in the back, demonstrated this, and it was confirmed by the exposure of the area of the verso corresponding to the feet that was done during the last days of the work by further cutting more threads around the perimeter of the shroud and allowing direct observation of a wider area. Next, photographic examination of the areas in the verso. Unfortunately, this kind of work did not give the results we hoped for, owing to extremely difficult focusing problems on the subject. Nevertheless, some stains remained impressed on the film, and they allow us to state that in some places, the recto, the reddish stains commonly indicated as blood, show a perfect correspondence with similar stains on the verso, thus indicating that in some places, the blood has filtered through the cloth onto the limits of the opposite, so to the limits of the imposed by the opposite surface. Next slide.
I think, keep, next. All right, let me slow down a minute on the slides and I think I can fill you in. The previous one is the container that the shroud is normally kept in. Go back.
Go back.
Go back.
No, the wrong way. The other way.
Other way.
No, not forward, backward. It's going one way.
You're doing fine. Keep it up. No?
Well, if you go long enough, you'll meet yourself coming back.
Did you take it back to the box?
Just do it at high speed. All right, we'll get back to it. You know?
Yep.
Okay, that's...
They're extracting the... Okay, keep going.
Next. Okay.
That's the box. Next.
Oh. Okay. Basically, he's saying that the blood has gone through, and on Maria's Spanish cloth, when I bled on it, and the same thing happened. The blood flows like a type of red viscous molasses, and it will go through, but it will not penetrate into the empty portion of the microfibrils that have been described like bamboo. The blood is too thick to get into the interior. Next, microbiological research on dusts. The vacuum-sucked dust from the back of the shroud and the wax fragments drawn from the recto were tested by many methods in order to arrive at some kind of a biological picture of the cloth. Such tests have provided some important elements for the future preservation of the shroud, and they can be summarized as follows. The shroud, the presence of very common bacilli and abundant fungi, such as Diplococcus constellatus, Diplococcus magnus, Ceva, Polypellinemoniae, and others, such as Mucorgenus rhizopus and more, were seen. From the wax was extracted the presence of common bacteria and others which are infrequent, such as Streptococcus aureus, Sarsenae, and most unusual, Fusobacterium necrophorum Ceva mortiferum, dangerous to man. The same tests were carried out on the samples from the box and gave evidence of abundant fungi and bacilli of many kinds. Of course, all of those pose a threat to the integrity of the linen through time. scanning electron microscopy of dust. This type of research has provided the greatest number of observations and data on this very research, and I concentrated most of my energy and time and personal expenditures. Owing to the large quantity of samples obtained, a non-systematic research was developed at random for every group of dust that were drawn. The items of major interest are pollens. They are frequent and abundant. Some are recent, others ancient. And there's a note here. I gotta go to another page for the note. New or recent pollen is clean, pollen which he placed in Turinese tap water for 1 week is covered by a layer primarily of calcium as determined by electron microprobe. The last historical use of water on the shroud was 1532 at the time of the fire. Presumably the first use was during the redding process at the time the linen was fabricated. And virtually all the pollens that he has found have been covered by a calcium deposit. Let's see where I am. Here we are. Figure five. A notable exception among many I examined was a fossil pollen of a genus Lycopodium, which most likely can be traced to the Cretaceous period. Next, please. No, that's not it. All right, there's no photo for that. But, you know, with the way people look at evidence, somebody's going to run around and say, ah, this is proof that it goes back to the Cretaceous period. Please don't do that.
Only the translator.
To avoid irretrievable damage to other items, I've never tried to clean the oldest pollen. Special attention was paid to the possible finding of pollen from Saponaria officinalis, but until now, no trace of such pollen, even blurred by coating or anything similar or shape or dimension, has been detected. Insects. From the beginning of the research, it appeared rather surprisingly that a large number of tiny insects exist on the back surface of the shroud. The technical preparation of the samples do not permit us to say that such insects are still exist today. But we can certainly maintain that in the past they have invaded the surface and may be since the manufacture of the cloth. Comparative research on dust drawn from Egyptian mummies of an earlier period than that of Jesus of Nazareth have provided us with very similar insects at the scanning electron microscopic level, and in some cases they are superimposable. Their classification is very difficult. Such they are unquestionably mites, and according to the Institute of Systematic Zoology of the University of Turin, are at least 10 times smaller, next photograph, than the mites which are known today. That's not a mite.
No, the last one was.
Pardon?
The previous one was the mite.
The previous one, yeah. Shrouds and Egyptian dust seem even more difficult to classify. Minerals in general. Mineral dust represent the bulk of the materials drawn. In some instances, their crystal aspect identifies them, but in most cases, their uneven shape does not permit any assumption. That's the mite, and the next one should be a crystal. Next slide, please. The most interesting findings are related to the areas of the hand and the face. In these areas, but not only there, many particles, mostly made of light elements, are observed. The prevailing chemical elements were silicon, sodium, aluminum, phosphorus, sulfur, chlorine, potassium, and calcium, which is the most abundant of all. Iron, copper, silver, lead, and gold. This last one for technical reasons.
No. Can you raise the slide a little bit, the last slide a little bit, show the spectrum at the bottom?
No.
Can you raise it up? A little more.
Okay.
Whoa, there you go. Thank you.
That's it.
There you go.
You know, the gold is an artifact, and he's found a couple of lead, and that's interesting because they appear to come from the heel area where there's presumably dirt. In the above connection, we can say that the light elements are often linked together in a complex and numerous combination that can suggest the abundance of various acid carbonates. Among the heavy elements, iron is prevalent in the samples examined. It shows to be two possible kinds of combinations, suggesting in the qualitative analysis the presence of organic and inorganic iron. There are particles of iron oxide on the cloth, which are pure iron oxide. There is iron linked to elements such as potassium, calcium, sodium, and others, which seems to be of organic origin, probably blood or its derivatives. Next slide, please. That one is presumably blood. Examination of comparative dusts using the same research methods employed on the shroud. After some unsuccessful attempts on dust from fabrics of difficult comparison, the analysis of dust from Egyptian mummies of a period around 1100 BC has provided the best and perhaps the most surprising results. In fact, the dust drawn from the skin of mummies beneath the innermost layer of the bandages show a considerable similarity in our microanalysis with most of the microanalysis made on shroud dusts. Moreover, important biological similarities were also noticed, such as, for instance, pollen incrustations and the similar aspect of bits of tiny insects found in both cases. Next. Next one. Okay. This is his reference iron oxide dust that he has used. Are there any more? Okay. Let's go through the next two. Yeah. Okay. All right. These are more examples of the insects, and parts of insects, which are mites unequivocally, and are part of his comparison with the Egyptian mummy cloth. The shroud is on top, and below are those from the Egyptian mummies. And their similarities, I think, are quite obvious even to a non-entomologist, or acarologist, as mite experts are called. Incidentally, you'll find that there was no such thing as a mite expert. It either has to be a predatory mite or a storage mite. I mean, it's like having, you don't have a nose and throater anymore, it's a left nostril expert. Okay, now we are several items whose shape and analysis are not well defined have led to the investigation of substances related to current and ever-increasing atmospheric pollution. Frequently, some particles have been recognized as hydrocarbon combustion derivatives originating to a large extent from central heating in the Turin area. Next slide, please. Okay. Other pollutants are related to the presence in the atmosphere of commercial detergents. It's also been found that articles which came in contact with the shroud, such as ex voto, sacred vestments, and painted copies of the shroud, have transferred traces of their constituents to it. These are the contaminants pointed out to before from artists painting it. In fact, extremely small particles of gold, silver, bronze, candle wax, and shreds of different fabrics and so forth have also been detected. Study for the proposal of suitable preservation methods for the shroud in the future. The information gained from the various aspects of the research made is such to provide useful indications for a suitable preservation method of this important document of Christendom, the property of all of mankind and silent witness of an immense suffering. The study of the proposal is underway in collaboration with James Druzik of Los Angeles, California. The present idea is based on the realization that an airtight container filled with inert gas is at least mandatory. Conclusion. The result of this research described opens a new hypothesis on the events related by the Gospels. The man in the shroud was prepared for burial along the Jewish tradition, probably strongly influenced by the Egyptian civilization of that time. Once dead, prominent people of the Western Mediterranean, as for instance the Egyptians and the Copts, were subjected to an embalming process consisting of a dehydrating treatment by coating the corpse with natron, a substance brought from Egyptian mines from Ostrakhina, whose chemical composition seems to be very close to much of the shroud dust particles examined by the scanning electron micrograph. A significant confirmation of this hypothesis may consist in the presence of insects of a very similar nature that are present both on the shroud and Egyptian mummies, as well as the likeness of respective pollens found on them. Along this hypothesis, the gospel narratives whereby pious men carried to the grave about 30 kilos of materials for treatment of the corpse seems possible and even acceptable. If aloes and myrrh and other spices were employed, they must have been so in a limited way and certainly not in such a large quantity that could not have been economically justified. It seems reasonable to think, instead, that such substances may have been mixed in the wet or dry dehydrating powder and represented the burden carried by the pious men. Lastly, a modest quantity of spices may explain the fact that to date no particles of such a kind have been identified in the dust examined. I believe the above hypothesis may also support the formulation of a new theory on the formation of the image in the shroud on which we are at present working. Thank you.
Molte grazie della pazienza e spero che vi sia stata gradita. Un saluto dall'italiano.
If I may make one comment, Professor Rigi has been working, doing all of this work essentially by himself alone in Torino. And he has put a tremendous amount of time and effort in and has really done some superb work. We hope to publish that here in the United States somehow soon. Thank you. The next and last paper in the chemistry aspect of the symposium are chemical considerations presented by Sam Pellicori. Excuse me, Sam, before you start, how much time do you want?
Beg your pardon?
How much time do you want?
Half an hour.
Okay.
You've seen a lot of presentations of data, and you probably have come to the same conclusion that I often come to, that data by itself is awfully boring. But when you have such a difficult subject as this, we quickly learn that in our process of checking ourselves and self-criticism, that any one piece of data alone is insufficient from which to advance. You really got to put things together and try to make a coherent picture. When you do that, then hypotheses begin to be generated. And when you have a hypothesis, now you've got something you can sink your teeth into. You can test it. You can try to see whether the next idea that comes into your mind fits the hypothesis. Now, hypothesis generation is fun, but it's also vulnerable. You're also vulnerable when you generate a hypothesis. You're vulnerable to being accused of being a nut, you know, at times. Well, you put up with that. You learn to live with these guys and tolerate all their funny ideas that depart from your own. Well, let's assemble some of the evidence and see where it leads us, particularly in the attempt to explain how the image got onto the shroud. Let me have the first slide. And the lights. First, let's review the image characteristics. Thank you. You've seen that the image consists entirely of straw-colored fibrils, which penetrate to a depth of only about 5/1000ths of an inch. That's about 2 to 4 fibrils in depth. It does not penetrate to the backside of the shroud. It is not water-soluble. There's no evidence of paint or protein. Finally broken. Colored particulates. It contains contour information suggestive of a human form. It appears as a reversed image, that is a light on dark background. Incidentally, a lot has been made of that, and I hope by now people don't consider that a mystery. Okay, and it's not fluorescent to ultraviolet.